On July 10th, the Seoul High Court ordered Nippon Steel and Sumitomo Metal, a Japanese steel giant, to pay 100 million won in compensation to four Koreans who were drafted to work for the predecessor of the company before World War II. This decision came amid growing tensions between Korea and Japan over territorial and historical disputes. Now, the ruling by the Seoul High Court is believed to be the first of its kind in Korea or Japan. A question is, how significant is this decision and what are the implications? To find out, we've invited Matthew Wilson. He's the professor of law and associate dean of academic affairs at the University of Wyoming College of Law. He's an international scholar at Kyung University and former associate professor of law at Temple Beasley School of Law program in Japan. On the line right now, Professor Wilson, hello.
Good evening.
Good evening to you, sir. First, how significant is this Seoul High Court decision?
You know, it's a very significant ruling. If you look at the press coverage that this has drawn around the world, whether it's the Wall Street Journal, Reuters, Bloomberg, it's widely been reported in the Japanese press, in the European press, and the way that it's being characterized is as a landmark ruling. And I think that's true on many levels.
What stance have the Japanese government and companies taken so far as this question of compensation for victims of forced labor?
Well, the stance that Japanese government and companies have traditionally taken is that this type of a matter is something that should be left to the legislature as opposed to the courts to decide. You have Japanese government that claims that all of the compensation that was due was paid under the 1965 Japan-South Korea Treaty, and at that point in time, whether it was for Korean veterans that fought as part of the Japanese forces, as they were forced to do that, whether it was forced laborers, whether it was comfort women in whatever capacity, the Japanese government and South Korean government made a treaty ruling out all claims against the government, companies, or individuals. And so that has been the standard posture of the Japanese government all the way back since 1965. As far as Japanese companies are concerned, they have taken the same stance to the extent that they have been sued. And there have been many suits in Japan and in South Korea from those that were subject to the forced labor for the comfort women as well. And their stance has generally been that they shouldn't have to pay compensation. There have been, at least to my knowledge, three different lawsuits. All of them were brought in Japan, actually, where you had big Japanese industries, including Nippon Steel, that at the very early stages of the litigation, I believe to avoid negative public publicity, they actually settled out and paid undisclosed amounts to the plaintiffs that had claimed. But typically they fought these issues in court, and their stance has been, this happened 70 years ago. It was resolved by a treaty. We should be looking towards the future, not looking back towards the past.
Now, the ruling is effective only in Korea, as we know. It's not going to result in compensation for the victims, right?
You know, that's going to be, I think, very difficult for the victims. This lawsuit by these four individuals actually has been going on for probably about 20 years. The plaintiffs, at least two of them, filed a similar case in Osaka, Japan, back in 1997, claiming that they were first forced to work at Nippon Steel's predecessor, one of their plants in Osaka, during the war. And in 2003, they eventually lost, and I believe their case went all the way to the Japanese Supreme Court. Instead of giving up, they decided that they were going to come to Korea and file their lawsuits here. At the time, the lowest court in Korea, the district court, held that due to the Japanese court rulings, particularly the Japanese Supreme Court ruling, as well as different corporate structures, today as opposed to 70 years ago, that the plaintiffs weren't entitled to compensation. Now, the Korean Supreme Court looked at the case and said, well, we think differently. And they they remanded or they sent the case back down to the High Court for consideration. The High Court looked at it, and that's why we have the July 10th right. ruling, where, you know, they're claiming that these were crimes against humanity. And these crimes against humanity violate the South Korean Constitution, the Japanese Constitution, and international order. So you have a dispute here where the Japanese court has said no compensation. You had several Korean courts say no compensation. But, you know, again, this is a landmark ruling. Now, the company could voluntarily pay if they wanted to. If they were trying to avoid negative publicity, you know, they could come out and engage in settlement talks. And I think the plaintiff's attorney is fairly optimistic that this is going to be what happened. But this lawsuit's been going on for 20 years, so I'm a little less optimistic.
Okay.
I don't think that the company is going to come forward and pay. As far as forced collection in Korea goes, there would have to be assets, you know, assuming that the company doesn't voluntarily pay. Here in Korea, that, you know, the court could then go and seize. But according to Nippon Steel and Sumitomo Metal, you know, they're at a loss. They don't have any assets here in Korea, no branch office, no factory. Now, they do own 5% of the South Korean steel giant POSCO. But, you know, the comment that somebody from Nippon Steel made after this was, we're not sure what assets would be targeted if the court orders some type of a seizure. As far as the Korean judgment, assuming that, you know, the plaintiffs were to go back to Japan and try and have the Japanese court recognize the South Korean judgment, which they could do, theoretically, what they're going to be up against is a Japanese court that's already said no and issued a ruling. So the chance of the victims being compensated probably lies in, you know, the company voluntarily paying, and that's about it.
So short of, I guess you don't see a lot of legal means to force the Japanese steelmaker to pay short of a voluntary effort. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, through the judiciary, I mean, that's definitely the case.
Now, if this latest ruling is upheld and once and for all it is a final ruling, does that inflame tensions between the two countries?
You know, I believe that it does inflame tensions. You know, after the ruling came out, you had Japan's chief cabinet secretary, Yoshihide Suga, who came out, and he said that all claims for compensation between Japan and South Korea have been settled. And if a court decision conflicts with our nation's stance, you know, it's something that cannot be accepted. And so, you know, I think it'll inflame it on a diplomatic level. You know, that's the immediate reaction from the Japanese government. You know, the Korean government maintains that the victims are entitled to pursue compensation both from a governmental and an individual basis. And so, you know, the government and diplomatically you have the conflict. You know, my concern definitely is on a corporate level as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Japanese companies are doing more business in South Korea than ever before. In fact, the figures that I'm familiar with show that, you know, bilateral trade has risen to more than $80 billion annually. I think Japanese companies were the largest source of foreign direct investment in South Korea last year, providing about $4.5 billion. And that's really, that's five times more than they invested in 2007. And I think a big part of that has been, you know, up until the last year, it seemed like, you know, Japanese and South Korean relations were getting, you know, fairly close, or at least comparatively close. You know, if you have a string of lawsuits, and a judgment like this could encourage, you know, additional lawsuits. There are actually, you know, five similar cases that are pending in South Korea right now. And so if you have a spat of lawsuits, Japanese governments are going, or Japanese companies are going to be very concerned about putting assets here in South Korea, be out of fear that, you know, if they don't pay these judgments, or if they have judgments, that their assets will be seized, and so that could potentially chill business.
All right. Certainly, we learned a lot. Thank you for your legal analysis, sir, and hope we can have you on the program again.
It's my pleasure. I'd love to.
Thank you. That was Professor Matthew Wilson with today's special interview. Let's get another quick check now of traffic and weather.